Hi there, this is Carolyn Mark, and you're listening to CJAM, CJAM, Windsor, Detroit.
Down in Death Valley on the day of the dead, at the lowest point in North America.
It's time for You Talking to Me with your host, Big JD.
All right, so to discuss the Plaza Ontario solar panel project and solar power in general, please welcome the Solar Power Network's president and CEO, Peter Goodman.
Thank you, JD.
I believe this is your first solar panel project, and why in Windsor? I know you're based in Toronto. Was there a prior relationship with Plaza Ontario, or did you approach a number of places maybe and ultimately choose a location?
Well, the Ontario feed-in tariff program, the solar program, is across Ontario. But we focused on the southwest, so the Windsor, Chatham, Leamington quadrant, if you will, because there's just more sun down there. So there's a higher incidence of sun and therefore electricity generation. And so we focused there as a priority, our first rollout of sites. And so we've, Plaza Ontario is part of that that rollout in 2012, second and third quarter, where we will be rolling out about 1 million square feet of rooftop space, panels on rooftop space, about 34 buildings, and we're building there because we started there.
Okay. Now, about Plaza Ontario and that project, Plaza Ontario is a flooring company located on Provincial Road here in Windsor with a 23,000 square foot rooftop, now equipped with nearly 1,000 solar panels. Tell us about that specific project.
Plaza Ontario really fits with what our company, Solar Power Network, is focused on. So they, there are a number of facets to the feed-in tariff. Ontario's feed-in tariff under the Green Energy Act. For example, there's microfit for residences and, a small project. And then at the other end of the spectrum, there is big solar farms. We are in the middle zone, focused on large industrial buildings like this one at Plaza Ontario.
Okay.
Where they have a big warehouse space. And so, sort of the range that we're in is at the lower end is about 10,000 square feet of usable space. At the lowest. And then we go up from there, we have buildings 50, 60, 70, 80,000 square feet. And so, what we need is a unshaded rooftop space with not a lot of obstructions. Typically, industrial buildings fit that best. And, we need that minimum square foot component. And Plaza fit that. I think they also, from a desire to contribute clean electricity to the grid, this was a way for them to align their marketing objectives and their green aspirations, if you will, and contribute in this way.
It's interesting to know, too, that the panels not only power the plaza, but I understand they also return power back to the grid to supply area businesses and homes, correct?
That's correct. So effectively the way it works is, the arrangement with Plaza Ontario and indeed our business model is about, being tenants on these large industrial buildings, manufacturing buildings. So we pay the building owners. So for example, at Plaza Ontario, we pay them a 20-year rent. And, we can pay that in various forms, either up front or at a monthly rental payment over 20 years. And, that gives us access rights to that building. We then, in turn, apply for a 20-year contract with the Ontario Power Authority, who's administering this program. And then we raise the capital and build the array on the building rooftop. So we own the array, and we own the electricity generation incentives that come out of those solar panels. But in reality, that electricity, to your point, goes right back in the grid. And, you know, electricity follows the path of least resistance. So the first place it gets consumed, if it's needed, is in that very building, so in Plaza Ontario. And if we're generating more electricity than that building is consuming, then it will go to the next adjacent facility that is consuming at that moment.
I would imagine that it doesn't, but does solar power have any negative effects on the environment?
The whole objective that the McGuinty Liberals had in mind several years ago when they started talking and launched this program was really about the environment and about offsetting coal-fired power plants. So as you know, we've got about 8 of them in Ontario at Nanticoke and Lambton. And those power plants, coal power plants, are one of are two locations of many in North America where, you know, coal is just part of our base load electricity generation. But the problem with coal is that they emit 60% of air pollution. You know, so greenhouse gases are one problem. What's even bigger than that is the air pollution and those smog days or those alert days that we have in Ontario, where especially on hot, sunny days, where those coal power plants kick in because we are using our air conditioning and buildings are using air conditioning and so on. And so coal power kicks in, pollution skyrockets. And so how do you deal with that? How do you deal with a contributor of 60% of air pollution, at its root cause? And the way this tariff and the way this Green Energy Act is designed, specifically with solar, is that we are producing solar power at the very moment in time when those coal power plants kick in. And so, in effect, we're offsetting that. We're eliminating the need for those power plants to kick in, and in so doing, we are significantly reducing the air pollution sitting over Ontario, if you will. From an environmental perspective, solar is a direct hit. Long story.
Right, right. And you mentioned that kind of kicks in to take over where it's needed. Now, is there something prohibiting or repressing a quicker change to total solar power as opposed to other energy sources?
It's a great point. I think one of the challenges right now is that the price of solar technologies and this whole Green Energy Act is basically to provide a economic incentive in these infancy days of this technology, much like Germany and Italy and the UK have done, for many years, to provide a way to make this economic. And so that's the challenge. You know, the challenge, which was the debate in the last provincial elections, was how much does a jurisdiction like Ontario really want to pay for incentives for being green? And so unless you really think hard about job creation, unless you think hard about health benefit and health costs, which represent 50% of our provincial budget. And take all those economics into the equation, it's hard to justify these incentives. So really, it's a cost problem. But the one thing I would say that while there's this cost challenge, and the act is about providing incentives, the price of the technology is coming down. And so, there will be a point in time really soon. I mean, Germany is now looking at a 2-year window when they believe they will be in a place where there's cost parity and no more incentives will be needed for solar. I think we're in the 3 to 5 year window here in Ontario. I think even our most optimistic views are getting better, than it was a couple of years ago, because the price of this technology is just dropping. There's a ton of competition in the market. There's innovation going on, particularly in Asia, where countries are motivated to get electricity out to remote regions and bring people up into the middle class zone. You need electricity. And they recognize the issues with coal and traditional forms of generation. And so they want to roll out solar. So they are producing through their factories, solar technology, solar R&D, and that's all providing price reductions. And we're seeing these price reductions here in Ontario. And, you know, to the earlier point, this is all going to help reduce the amount of incentives that Ontario has to pay to bridge this gap.
Right. I'm sure there's a lot of people that are unhappy with current electrical costs. Now, will companies like Enwin still kind of monopolize, you know, in this area, or will we see like private companies running the show for solar power?
The way the Ontario Power Authority, you know, who's mandated by the Minister of Energy, has rolled this out, I think it's probably the most sensible thing, which is that the local hydro companies like Enwin, Chatham, Kent, Hydro One in some locations, many locations, are in the best position because they have the infrastructure, both the electrical infrastructure that we need for connection and for serving, you know, the grid, and they have the billing and management of accounts infrastructure in place where they can administer this whole program. And so, you know, the rollout for the next 20 years for contracts are through the local distribution carriers like Enwin. And I think that will continue, and I think it makes the most sense.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, to your concern about pricing, you know, pricing is set at an Ontario level. You know, it's set by the Ontario Energy Board based on, you know, a whole bunch of supply and demand requirements. And mostly about this problem of peak load. What happens when, you know, our nuclear generating base, our hydro generating base is no longer sufficient on those, you know, those days, you know, particularly in the summer and parts of the fall, where we're just in peak demand. And I think, you know, pricing that is based on some of these issues that we're talking about.
I just want to ask how solar power compares to that supplied by wind turbines.
It's a great point because, you know, the Southwest region is, you know, seems to be the green hotbed for solar and for wind turbines. I'm a little biased, obviously, but
sure.
but I would say this. So the feed-in tariff that the you know, the Power Authority has designed with the Ontario Energy Board, you know, really is paying the amount required for when energy is generated. So I think the incentives are, you know, are properly aligned. I think the challenge, there are two challenges with wind, and obviously I'm speaking as a solar guy, so I'll say that
sure.
Right off. The first challenge is that for whatever reason, people have not, you know, whether it's in the Southwest or along, you know, along Lake Huron, people in Ontario have not gotten comfortable with the look on the landscape. And it's a big issue. You know, some would argue it is the issue that lost McGuinty his majority in the last election. So people don't like the way it looks. People are fine in Germany, Italy, other parts of the world, but in California, but they're not here, and, you know, there's nothing you can do. It's just, it's an Ontario perception. So that's issue number one. I think the second issue with wind turbines is that most of the electricity or the time when wind is producing, you know, the most through turbines from an electricity generation perspective happens at times when we don't need the electricity. So, you know, it is typically on cloudy, windy days, many times at night, when, you know, and on the sunny, hot days, when you really need it to deal with this peak load demand point I made earlier, wind turbines are sitting there idle. And so the timing of when production happens from wind is completely misaligned for when we really need green electricity to impact our coal power plants. And, you know, that's where solar has a great advantage. And I think as tariffs roll out in the future with the Ontario Power Authority, so they rethink the program as they are right now in terms of pricing and process, I think we'll see that reflected in prices and volumes. I think we'll see more and more rooftop solar getting priority, and getting focus and so on because of, you know, just some of these benefits about, you know, generation where it's needed, about time of day generation, when the sun is out and when it's hottest. You know, and at the end of the day, it's kind of out of sight. It's not an eyesore on landscape. And, you know, in effect, you're using unused rooftop space, using idle rooftop space to do something positive. And you know, at the end of the day, from a building owner perspective, like Plaza, it is it's newfound revenue.
Yeah, you definitely touched on an important point, and that's the fact that those turbines can be very intrusive as far as being an eyesore.
I don't mind them, but I don't have to look at them. And I know that there have been, you know, there have been many, many debates. The Ontario Medical Association has been hauled in terms of vibration concerns.
Sure, yeah.
And many of those appear to have been addressed. But at the end of the day, perception rules, and voters in those locations will drive policy. And they are driving policy, and I think we'll see that reflected in the next iteration of the feed-in tariff, which we're, you know, expecting in the next month or so. You know, the Ontario government is coming out with a redefinition of prices, a reduction in incentives paid, and how they're going to focus on wind versus solar. And I think we'll see that reflected in a decisive and more focused move towards solar for these reasons.
And I guess we got to be careful of the birds as well.
Exactly. I forgot about that, right. That other point, you know? And, migration pattern. I know that was a big issue down at some of the wind turbine installations down near Leamington.
And we'll be right back. If you have an interesting career or an interesting life experience that you'd like to share with others, you can contact me, Big JD, at the You Talking To Me website, youtalkingtome.ca. That's the letter U, talking, the number two, me, youtalkingtome.ca. All right, we're back with the Solar Power Network's Peter Goodman. Now, you mentioned this a little bit, not in these terms of kickback or revenue generated type thing, but tell me a little about leased roof space. I know it's you guys that rent the space, but can companies generate revenue as well by adding solar panels to the roof, or is there some type of a benefit or tax break to them from the government?
So the Ontario government hasn't specified who can and who can't do this. So if you're a building owner, for example, in, you know, this middle zone between the small residential microfit program and the big solar farms, you know, which is the area we're talking about, you know, so you're a manufacturing building owner, and you know, you can basically do this yourself. So you can spend the capital and generate income through these incentives. I think what we're finding, you know, we went out, 2 years ago and offered both services to building owners. We said, you know, we'll either rent your building for 20 years where we'll own the asset, we'll pay, you know, spend the capital on the asset, we'll own and operate the asset for 20 years. There'll be tenants on your rooftop, and your piece of this value chain will be the potential income. That was our proposition to building owners. And and then alternatively, we said, you know, if you don't want to do that and you want to operate the solar facilities yourself, depending on the size of the building, you know, we're talking about a $2 to $3 million investment. We'll come in as a contractor, if you will, an engineering design contracting firm, and we'll do it for you. And if you want us to operate it, you know, and so we gave people both options, and invariably, you know, sitting down with owners, you know, whether it's single family, you know, mom owners, or, you know, the big corporates, those companies, I would say, almost without fail chose to be tenants. You know, for us to be tenant on their rooftop, where we just pay the rental income, and so that seems to be the way forward, because, you know, it's a new technology, it's risk, it's capital, and all that stuff, and they like this partition of, you know, they, you know, the partition of landlord to tenant. I think people get that relationship. They understand it. It's not a significant risk for them. We partition ourselves legally in this landlord-tenant relationship. I think we also try and, you know, provide all the other risk concerns. So, you know, things like, impact to rooftop.
Right. Now, is there any actual structural testing that comes into place before actually doing the work, or is that just pretty much determined by the type of building that it is or what you're putting there as far as solar panels?
We have to go through the same, for any construction installation project that has, you know, has the kind of impact and risk that this does. We have to go through the same process. So we've got to bring in, you know, independent engineering firms to look at all of what I just described. And then we apply to the local municipality for permits, and they go through their own process. And, of course, from a electrical safety perspective, both the Electrical Safety Authority as well as the local hydro company, so Enwyn or Chatham-Kent, whatever the case may be, has to go through their approval from electrical connection risk and safety perspective. So, all those steps in terms of pre-qualifying a building before, you know, we do anything there, mm-hmm. We have to make sure that that happens. I will say that one of the reasons, one of the biggest challenges is this one you're raising, which is that, you know, across Ontario, as I mentioned earlier, our buildings weren't necessarily thought of and envisioned and engineering designed with stuff on the roof.
Right.
And so many buildings are, you know, are not designed with a lot of excess capacity. And so, you know, one of the biggest reasons I would say we've had success in the market persuading building owners to sign up with our company is that, our low panel angle, so the, you know, you can put, you know, without getting too detailed here, you can put solar panels at various angles on the roof. And most of our competitors tend to go with a high panel angle, where arguably generate the most electricity. So it's a great from a generation perspective. But, you know, it sits up like a sail in the wind. And so the wind load on that is quite significant. It has snow load effects as well. And so now you've got, you know, now you've got a building that might qualify because the structure was never designed to have that.
Right.
And so, you know, the challenge is that then they've got to go back, you know, some of our competitors have to go back to the building owners and say, you know, sorry, we're just kidding. You don't qualify. And, you know, that discussion, to, you know, back to your question, some of these challenges with buildings and structures, some of our competitors have an attrition rate of 25 to 35% where they just can't make it work. And so now they've got to go back to building owners and have that discussion after they've done this pre-engineering that I'm describing.
Sure.
Alternatively, our company... recognizing that these are the challenges and, you know, we don't want to sort of dance with a building owner getting all these legal lease issues nailed down only to tell them after we do our detailed engineering it doesn't work. And so, you know, I put forward when I talk to building owners that our attrition rate to date is zero. In other words, there's not a building that we can't make work.
Mm-hmm.
And it all goes to thinking through how you locate, how you angle your panels where, you know, in some cases, it's almost flat. So it's almost flat to the building surface. It's almost, you know, so the wind load on that is as insignificant as having nothing on that roof, if I can put it in those terms.
Right.
Because it's not protruding about to catch wind or be a snow fence. And so that is a big part of our design, and it's part of why building owners, line up with us. I'll add another plug here about issue of buildings and how they qualify or not.
Mm-hmm.
My previous life, in terms of my experience, is in the telephony cell phone industry, where, as chief engineer for Telus. and my role in at TELUS Mobility was to line up 20-year leasing contracts with buildings across Canada, because, you know, as you know, you're either putting cell phone towers on ground sites, you're putting cell antennas on rooftops. Mm-hmm. And so in that role, so there's, you know, myself and several of our company experts come out of that industry where we had to sign up 20-year leases with building owners. We had to go through the structural engineering approval process and qualification process before we put our equipment on. We then had to deploy our capital and run a distributed network across Canada and make sure that that worked operationally without impacting the operations of the building owner. And so, you know, that process, that value, that experience, that success with, you know, with hundreds and perhaps thousands of building owners across Canada in that role is what we bring to this. And so, you know, when I talk about pre-thinking structural loads, about pre-thinking how the connection is going to work with the local distribution company, the municipality, and most importantly, making sure that the building owner is not fussed by what we've done, whether it's perception, it's real, or whether, you know, we have in some way impaired their ability to do what they do. And so, you know, making sure that, that we've done all that is what we bring to this industry from this previous cell phone industry that I'm describing.
Back to the Plaza Ontario project. Does the plaza run on solar power alone, or does it also require regular electrical power?
You know, it's a great point. One of the one of the ways that the Ontario Power Authority has put a standard design out there for us to follow is that, you know, buildings like Plaza Ontario, and in fact the standard design is that they remain connected to the grid. And so they continue to be connected. They've got that umbilical cord, if you will, and they will continue to pay the same rates to, you know, in this case, Enwin, mm-hmm. as they did whether or not we're there. So they're connected, and all we've done is provided this parallel connection, if you will, and, you know, which says that if we are generating electricity through a separate meter that we get, you know, we get paid on the basis of with our contract with the Power Authority and through Enwin, in this, you know, we've got this parallel connection. And if we're generating electricity, that electricity comes right back and it's used at Plaza Ontario. In the event that we're not, or we're not making enough, then they're still connected and they use Enwin's energy as they did previously.
Okay.
So yeah, if we're making too much, it goes to the adjacent buildings on that street, as we described. But they're never without, or they don't have to make that on-off switch in any way, shape, or form. In fact, nobody does. It's simply electricity falling on these paths of resistance, where if we're making it, they get it. If we're not, they continue to consume it.
Where can listeners find out more information about the Solar Power Network?
Yeah, so at solarpowernetwork.ca. You know, so from a building owner perspective, you know, in that flat roof category of, you know, minimum 10,000 square feet of unshaded rooftops, would love to speak to you. We right now there is no limit on the amount of buildings we can sign up with the Power Authority, at least when we're of any. And so we're continuing to sign up building owners.
All right, good stuff. And once again, that's solarpowernetwork.ca. Peter Goodman, CEO of the Solar Power Network. Peter, thanks for being on the show.
Great chatting with you, Jim.
All right, thanks, Peter. See ya.
Well, I would definitely say we need a new energy source, and the sun seems like an energy source that we probably wouldn't run out of anytime soon. This is You Talking to Me. I'm Big JD. Thanks for listening.